Stream Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet. Start your engines. This is the Chasing Checkers Podcast with Chase McCain on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Welcome in, Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5, The Game, online at thegamenashville.com, on iTunes as well, search for Chasing Checkers, and on SoundCloud. How you doing? Chase McCabe, hanging out every week, episode number 20. We are trucking right along here on this show. I appreciate all of the support and all of the kind words. I know a lot of you race fans out there have enjoyed it, so I appreciate it. And thanks to NASCAR as well that they have been great about serving up drivers throughout the year. And we've had a lot of fun guests from Fox and NBC. So hope to have even more coming up here in the next few weeks. Grant Lynch from the Talladega Super Speedway. He is the chairman. He is going to join us this week as the race from Talladega is next week, but doing a little promotion. So he's going to be coming on with us this week. But you know what we have to lead things off with. Right. I mean, come on. We have talked about it all year long. And now that it has finally happened, there is a race in the books. We got to talk about the Roval. Ryan Blaney is the guy that comes away with the win. It was a wild, wild race. I think it was expectedly unexpected is probably the best way to put it. And you ask the drivers, you ask NASCAR, you ask Marcus Smith from Speedway Motorsports Incorporated, better known as SMI. Look, they were all pleased with it. They see things that they need to work on, but I will give them credit. Watching that thing, I was entertained. It was a wreck fest. I mean, there were a lot of wrecked race cars throughout the whole weekend, but ultimately, I think they got the excitement and everything they were looking for. And the drivers, they seem to be happy with it, all the drivers. So I think NASCAR has to feel pretty good about the weekend. And we will hear from Steve O'Donnell from NASCAR. You'll hear from Marcus Smith from SMI here in just a few minutes. But first, the man of the hour, the guy that can say he won the first ever race from the Roval. Here is Ryan Blaney with NBC after the race.
You know, sometimes the best place to be on the last lap, Ryan, is in third place, isn't it? How did the seas part by your view?
I don't know, man. It's honestly, you hate sometimes to see, that happen. You hate to see two of the best cars wrecked, but I don't know. You just try to capitalize on the circumstances given to you. And, we were in the right spot at the right time, and we're able to sneak through there. I almost wrecked trying to get back to the gas to get through there. But like I said, we put ourselves in a good spot, and I can't thank the 12 group enough for sticking with me all weekend. It was a long weekend for us. I hit a lot of stuff, and clearly I still did. And just happy it worked out. Happy to not only win, but to advance. And it was looking pretty tight, but I can't think of a better group of guys to be with. And looking forward to round two. Pretty cool.
As he mentioned, Ryan Blaney advances.
Ryan Blaney does advance. Marty Snyder there with NBC doing that interview in Victory Lane. So that win is an automatic ticket to the round of 12. Now, one guy that is not going to be racing in the round of 12 is the 7-time champion Jimmy Johnson. That leads us kind of to the end of the race, how Ryan Blaney was able to get that win, because Jimmy Johnson was in a very good position. I mean, we know his success at the Charlotte Motor Speedway, but this is, of course, the road course, and he was in position to win. He wanted to win. He ended up taking out himself and Martin Truex Jr. In the closing laps, opening the door for Ryan Blaney, but Jimmy Johnson spoke with NBC after the race on his thought process.
Jimmy Johnson this year will not have a shot to make it 8 championships, Dave.
So we're just bringing that news to Jimmy now. With that finish, Jimmy, you are officially out. You will not move on to the next round. Describe for us coming to 15, knowing that there was one shot for the win.
Yeah, I was more worried about the win than anything else. And I hate that I started wheel hopping and took Martin and I out. That's the last thing that I wanted to do. And I put pressure on him into turn 3. He washed up. And I thought that I was going to be in the prime braking zone going into that final turn and have a shot at it. And when I went to the brakes, it started locking the rears and wheel hopping, and I didn't think I hit him at first. I knew I was spinning, obviously, but I guess I collected him in my spin, and certainly regret doing that. And then ultimately, we were in a transfer position and didn't get it. So just going for the win. You know, it's these wins are so important, and the veteran could have taken the safe route and didn't, and unfortunately, took us out of the playoffs and took out the 78.
He quickly processed what he had to do. Unfortunately, could not get across the line, Rick, quick enough to save his playoff hopes this year.
Jimmy Johnson with Dave Burns of NBC. Dave always does a great job there, and you heard the honesty with Jimmy Johnson on he kind of did what he had to do to go for the win. That's all he was thinking about, and you can't blame him. You look at his year overall, yes, he made the playoffs, but did you really think he was going to be one of those guys? I know you always want to say, well, it's Jimmy Johnson. You never want to rule Jimmy Johnson out. Jimmy Johnson is a 7-time champion for a reason, but he just hasn't been that competitive. I don't want to go as far as to say he's been a shell of his former self. It's been a down year for Hendrick Motorsports. It's been a down year for Chevrolet. I feel like Jimmy Johnson has a lot left in the tank, but this just hasn't been his year. So the fact that he was in a position to go for the win, I mean, excuse me, I mean, I don't blame him. I don't blame him at all for going for the win like he did. And he actually spoke at Dover, he had a press conference and was asked after a week of reflection kind of how he felt about everything.
My thought process was to be inside of him going into that corner and to have his spotter stay inside. He, as it turns out, was trying to protect that move and drifted up in the middle of NASCAR 3 and 4. And so I had my opportunity on the inside. And again, my whole goal, and I thought about it for weeks, was to try to have the spotters say that I was on one side or the other, because it really affects your angle out of the chicane there, and I would have a shot at the win. So I set all that up, and all that went great until I made a mistake on the brakes. And unfortunately, it cost me a lot. And there was one point in time there, if the 96 car could have got running, that it wouldn't have cost me the ultimate of advancing and moving on. And then also, sadly, in the process of me getting control of the car, I did lose control and eventually collected Martin. So it wasn't a bonsai move, just trying to clean him out. I mean, it was a very calculated move, and we both hit the brakes at the same point in time. And unfortunately, I got it wrong, and there were many consequences to follow after that. So disappointed. It's way easier after the fact is over to say, well, why didn't you and how come and all that kind of crap. But I was focused on winning a race, and that's what got me there.
What's classy about Jimmy Johnson is he always admits when he makes a mistake, and he clearly made a mistake. He miscalculated. Look, these drivers aren't perfect, people. I mean, they're going to do that. You do this for a living, you're going to screw something up at one point in time, and that's what happened. It was the wrong move, and it didn't cost Martin Truex Jr. It cost him the win, maybe, but it didn't cost Martin Truex Jr. a spot in the round of 12. It cost Jimmy Johnson a spot in the round of 12. So he's not racing for an eighth championship now. He's going to start looking ahead to next year, try and win some races, and then look ahead. So, that's kind of the crux of the whole situation with him is, yeah, he went for it, and it didn't work. It didn't pay off. And sometimes those are the breaks. But it worked out for another guy, Eric Almirola, a driver of the 10 car. Look, there was a three-way tie for the final spots in the round of 12. Jimmy Johnson is the first one out, then Austin Dillon, then Denny Hamlin, then Eric Jones. You look at Eric Almirola and Alex Bowman. Alex Bowman sitting right at 3,000 points. Almirola was 1 point ahead of him, and then you have Kyle Larson with 3,006, Chase Elliott with 3,008. We'll run through the standings in the next segment, but Eric Almirola was the one that really was able to benefit from this with this tie. Kind of a long answer, but Eric Almirola on zero being good enough.
They told me, so we got caught up in that wreck getting into turn one. We were good right there. They told me I was good on points. And then Keselowski and Larson and all piled it in there, and the cars just came across the racetrack and blocked the track. I got stopped to keep from running into them, and the 43 car plowed into the back of me and drove me straight into the wreck. And I thought that was it. I thought that was the end of our day. And we were able to come down pit road and work on it and fix it.
And our whole day was like that, man. The 24 blew a right front tire in the middle of oval four, and I was behind him, and I was trying to go to the outside of him, and he kept coming up, 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 and I smashed the wall and had to come and pit because we were going to blow a tire. We just battled adversity all day, and then that last restart, they told me I was minus 6 points and that I needed to go. And I rifled it down into turn one and wheel hopped and cleared a few of them out and got by, I think, three. And then we came back to the start-finish line. They told me I needed three more spots. And those last couple laps, I was able to get those three spots. And I had one more in my sights. And somebody spun off of the infield turn four. And it was just a cloud of smoke. I couldn't see where I was going. So I checked up because the last thing I needed to do was wreck. And almost got passed by the 19, and there was the car that I was getting ready to pass went through there wide open. I guess didn't have anything to lose, and I couldn't make up that ground. I couldn't get back to him, and so when we come back around, they told me I was tied, and it happened to be just good enough because of our finishes the last couple weeks at Vegas and Richmond. That was the tie break. And so I told Johnny Klossmeyer going in this weekend, all I really cared about was leaving here plus one. And turns out plus zero is good enough.
Talking about the tie, Eric Almirola on making it to the round of 12. And you've heard me say on this show a few times this year, Eric Almirola makes that move over to Stuart Haas Racing, takes over the 10 car from Danica Patrick, brings Smithfield sponsorship with him. Look, he's going to win some races. I'm just telling you, he hasn't done it yet this year, but he's going to win races in that equipment. That's a good race car driver and a guy that he's never really been in the best equipment. When he was over at Gibbs, he obviously had some good stuff, but there wasn't really a spot for him to move up to the next level. So he kind of went off the beaten path and went, you know, ran for Richard Petty. And he's never been in really good stuff. He's in really good stuff now. So I think that he's going to get it done at some point in time for them. But a great run by Eric Almirola to be able to get in there make it to the round of 12. So the Roval in the books. Now, when we come back here on Chasing Checkers, we'll run through the standings, like I said, but you'll hear more from Ryan Blaney, and Clint Boyer also has some stuff to say about the Roval. But you'll also hear from Marcus Smith and Steve O'Donnell. I want to give you the NASCAR and the track point of view on how this thing went. And also Grant Lynch from the Talladega Super Speedway. He's coming up a little later on. It's Chasing Checkers. Find us on iTunes, also on SoundCloud, thegamenashville.com. Is the best spot, and right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hey, what's going on? It's Chase McCabe. Check out my podcast, Through the Ropes. We talk all things professional wrestling. I have a different co-host every week. You can check it out in the on-demand section of thegamenashville.com, on Apple iTunes, and also on the air on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Oh, it's true. It's true. We're back, Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe here with you. Follow me on Twitter at Chase on Game, online at thegamenashville.com, on iTunes as well. Just search for Chasing Checkers, and you can also find us on SoundCloud. So you can get this show in a lot of different places. Appreciate all the support. Grant Lynch coming up here in just a few minutes. But right now, we're going to hear from Dave Blaney. I knew I was going to do that at some point. I've had Ryan Blaney, of course, talking about him winning the race. But I knew I would say Dave. But we will, here in just a few minutes, hear from Ryan Blaney. But first, as always, let's look at the standings as we start the round of 12. Kyle Busch is your leader. He is 47 points to the good right now, followed by Kevin Harvick in the number two spot, 42 to the good. Martin Truex Jr., the big three, rounding out the top three, 30 to the good. Now, little separation, Brad Keselowski in fourth place, 17 points to the good. Clint Boyer is fifth, up seven. Joey Logano in sixth, up six. Kurt Busch, seven. He is up six. And Ryan Blaney rounds out the top eight. he is up five because the round of eight is the next round. Now, those with work to do as they start the round of 12. Chase Elliott is five back in ninth. Kyle Larson, seven back in 10th. Eric Almirola, 12 back in 11th. And Alex Bowman was the last car in, 13 points out of 8th in 12th place as they go into Dover this weekend. So those are the playoff standings right now. And you heard Ryan Blaney say in victory lane that, you know, it was kind of getting tight there. Right now, he is the last car in, but he spoke a little bit more in the post-race press conference on the ending of a wild race from the Roval.
You know, coming out of when I got out of the bus stop, I could still see him through the Oval 3 and 4, and they were really close to each other. Jimmy was almost pushing him. I'm like, yeah, they might get physical here. And, you know, I don't know what happened. By the time I got to him, or by the time I was able to see something, Jimmy was sideways, and I'm sure they just tried to outbreak each other, and which can't blame them. They're going for the win, of course. And, you know, so when I was thinking they were kind of sitting there, I almost wrecked trying to get through the chicane as fast as I could, just because you're trying to make up time and try to seize the moment. But it was kind of just disbelief. I didn't really know what. You're just kind of shocked that something like that happens and that you're lucky to be in that spot. Luck has not been on our side very often. And sometimes you find a nut, but it was good to have happened. It's just not good that happened. It just, you know, luckily it worked out for us.
Ryan Blaney talking about the ending of the race. And I want to go ahead and play this for you too, because he discussed his win and what it meant to get a win for Roger Penske. He's had a win in the Cup Series before, but now winning his first race with RP and what that means.
Yeah, we were that's kind of one of the thoughts in the back of our head, and the kind of the strategy for the race was, you know, really don't give up stage points and try to maximize on that side of it. And we did a really good job of the strategy of being able to win that second stage stretch it on fuel and win that stage. That was really big for us. That kind of set up our whole day. Even though we had to go to the back and pit again, we were able to kind of put ourselves in a spot to where towards the end of the day, we were just racing the 88 and 14, and we were just riding, you know, right in front or behind in the 88, just because we didn't want to let him out of our sight. So when he pitted towards the end of the race, we pitted it just to stay on the same strategy, same with 14. But, we put ourselves in a spot to capitalize on something happening, and we did. But, really big to be able to win for Roger. You know, obviously that's not the way I'd want to do it. Obviously I want to go out and dominate the race. These whenever you win something like this, it's a weird feeling. I don't really want to call it an undeserved feeling, it's just kind of an odd feeling, but we put ourselves in a good spot. But no, it was worked out for us. But yeah, we were, when I was running third, I was just thinking about points. You know, we were good on points, and I was just cool with riding around in third. But then that situation happened, and we happened to be there.
I think Ryan Blaney is very deserving of a win. I mean, he's had some consistent results this year. He got into the playoffs on points. I think any driver would want to dominate, and he was unable to do that. But a win is a win. They go in the book the same way. So Ryan Blaney gets the win. Now, as for the results of the Roval and what everybody thought, you're going to hear from several different people. We'll start with Clint Bowyer, who never is short on words, but he discussed in post-race just that he's happy for the sport, but it was definitely a wild ride.
It's a very challenging racetrack, challenging set of tires that we have for it. Those tires were pretty hard. And, and then track positions, everything. I mean, our day in particular is, we knew we needed an opportunity. I knew this race was the opportunity. I just didn't know if we could capitalize on that opportunity. You knew some people were going to have trouble. You tried to make sure that you're not one of those people. We did a good job of bringing a fast race car, did a good job of qualifying well. That put us in a position to get those stage points and get ourselves at least in the dance floor, that first stage. But then then you get behind, then you're behind a little bit. Then, you know, by the time I got back up through them, I had both fenders knocked in and hit a damn turtle once. And you know, that's going to slow you down a little bit. I mean, it's just all product of being back in traffic and things like that. Then we kind of got track position back. Then we lost it again. Then the 88 pitted. So he was really at that point who we were racing for our position. Key point, at that point he was the only car that we were racing. When he pitted, we pitted, 12 pitted, and you know, then it was kind of a race between us and the 88. I knew as long as I kept him at arm's reach, I thought I could be all right. But then us, we start catching those lappers. If he gets to him before I do, and you know, things like that, it could be tricky. But nonetheless, I don't know what all happened.
Clint Bowyer didn't know what all happened there, and he actually went on to say before that you know, he was happy for the sport, that he thought it was a success, but it was a wild and crazy weekend and he needed a beer. So Clint Bowyer, of course, bringing the humor. But I think you got that general consensus from everybody that, you know, that there were a lot of unknowns going into it. You weren't really sure what the results would be, but overall everybody seemed to be pretty happy with the racing and with how it all turned out with the Roval. I mean, we talked about it all year long, and they, you know, they finally figured it out and made it work. They will make some changes before next year, but I don't see NASCAR going away from this anytime soon. And, you know, I think they're just going to continue to improve upon it. Now, before we get to Marcus Smith, Jamie McMurray, who finished second, obviously a great run for Jamie McMurray as he'll be departing Chip Ganassi Racing at year's end. He was asked a very interesting question on whether, you know, having run the road course at Daytona, which also uses parts of the Roval, is there any type of comparison?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing to me that this track reminded me of Daytona is, especially with the splitters, is that in the Rolex car, you could go really quick through the back bus stop if you used more curb, but every time you did, it would just destroy the splitter. And that was kind of the same way here today. You could get fairly aggressive, but as far everything else is just so much different. You know who you're racing with. In the Rolex race, half the guys you're around, you don't even know who's in the car. And it could be somebody different every time you catch the same car. So it's pretty, I mean, it's so much different.
Yeah, and I don't think you can really make a true comparison between the NASCAR Cup cars and the Rolex 24 cars that they run there at Daytona. But, you know, I think... I think that you're going to see everybody try and find that comparison and kind of see, you know, where that develops. But I thought it was an interesting question and wanted to kind of give you the answer there. Marcus Smith, of course, is the chairman of SMI. He did a little press conference after the race to kind of give his thoughts on the results and seemed very pleased with everything going on at the Roval.
Wow. Well, sitting here makes me feel like I just won the race. And it was really an amazing day, you know, a 3-year journey to get here. And everything just kind of culminated today and throughout this week. I think everything that we saw on track, the competition was really phenomenal. The track was very raceable. And, you know, we saw cars go 2 wide, 3 wide in a couple of occasions where, you know, there's a lot of concern about the width of the track and being able to race without, you know, a lot of red flags. So I think this was another one of those amazing, memorable moments for certainly for me and I think for NASCAR. When you think about great moments, the first time we ever turned on lights here at Charlotte Motor Speedway, one hot night for the All-Star race, and then today, the inaugural Bank of America Roval 400, I think for me, it really lived up to the hype.
I think it did too, and a couple things. NASCAR might play with the idea of making it a longer race next year. I've read that, and, you know, of course, with him referencing one hot night there at the Charlotte Motor Speedway, of course, he was asked if they would possibly run a Roval race under the lights.
Good questions. Yeah, I've had a few people talk about night racing on the Roval, and, you know, that – who knows? There are, I know there's at least one night race. F1 has their night race. I think that That's a possibility. Right now, you know, I think we're going to take some time to kind of bring all the ideas together. Everybody's got lots of ideas. We take notes as a group, as a company. We have sort of this repository of ideas that we email to a particular email address on the in the team, and it's just chock full of ideas. And so we'll take all those things, pull them together, and think about what we can do to make it to make things better. We're always sort of in a constant state of improvement and passion to make things fantastic and exceed expectations. So we'll look at those things and see what happens next.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're going to run it under the lights. That's what Charlotte does. They always find ways to make things interesting and to keep adding to already great things. They're going to build off this. They're going to look at it. And, you know, if Saturday night under the lights is kind of the way to do it, we've never had a road course race under the lights in NASCAR. So I think that'd be kind of cool. I mean, because you're able to do it. This is the type of track and type of surface that you would be able to do that on, that it logistically would work out. Steve O'Donnell, of course, is director of competition. I'm paraphrasing his title. I apologize for that. But the guy that is working so closely with the tracks and the rules and things like that, he gave his thoughts on the Roval.
I think from our perspective, certainly a wild race. A lot of work went into this event. Applaud Marcus Smith and his whole staff for believing in it, kind of seeing an idea, turning it into a vision. I think from the moment everyone showed up at the track, just the look of the facility was tremendous, and we all felt like this was hopefully going to be something good, and I think it delivered on the track.
Steve O'Donnell talking about the success of the Roval and kind of how they feel about it in NASCAR. He went on to say they're going to go look at some things, look at video, talk with Marcus Smith and the track, talk with the drivers, and, you know, obviously we'll make their changes as needed before next year. So, you know, we got a whole year until they run this place again, but everyone seems to be pleased. Now, one more thing I want to hit on with the Roval before we get to Grant Lynch from Talladega. Marcus Smith was asked, could he see other tracks that have the capabilities of having a road course in the infield? Could we see the Rovalization of other tracks?
That's a great question. I love how you're channeling your inner Larry Mack with the pump the brakes. I do think that, you know, we can learn from our history and see that, you know, there was a time when nobody really cared for short tracks, or at least, you know, the majority of fans and NASCAR really didn't care for short tracks. Now we love short tracks. There was a time when Charlotte was the best, the most amazing track design ever, you know, and then a lot of people followed suit. I think that, you know, learn from that past and see what might help us going forward. So certainly, you know, I'm not looking at any of our properties to add a road course into, you know, Rovalizing, as you said. I feel like this is unique to Charlotte, and we've got, you know, other speedways out there that produce their own unique action. Plus, on top of that, I'm really excited about all the things I'm hearing about next year's racing with the new aero and power package. I think it's going to be fantastic for the whole sport.
Marcus Smith discussing the possibility of the Rovalization of other tracks in NASCAR. So we'll see. We'll see where this thing goes, if I could speak. Grant Lynch is the chairman of the Talladega Super Speedway. He is going to join the show next. Of course, that race coming up here in just a few weeks. And then we will preview Dover. It's Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game, and online at thegamenashville.com.
Anchor down and listen up with me, Max Herz, host of the all-new Anchor Down podcast, talking all things Vanderbilt Commodores with new episodes every Monday and Thursday on thegamenashville.com.
Welcome back in, Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe here with you, as always, online at thegamenashville.com and on the app as well. And we got Talladega coming up here in just a couple of weeks. October the 12th through the 14th. It is the 1000bulbs.com 500 from the Talladega Super Speedway, and their chairman, Grant Lynch. You've heard him on these airwaves quite a bit. He's on the line with us. Grant, it's almost here. Can't wait.
That's right, Chase. It's not far away. I guess about 10 days away. We'll start on Friday and get ready to go and go all the way through the weekend into the big one on, as you mentioned, on Sunday with the 1000bulbs.com 500. So we're excited about the upcoming weekend and the chance to have all the people come down from up where you all are and all throughout the Southeast, and looking forward to a big crowd.
I was at an event a few weeks ago at Martin's Barbecue here in town with Clint Boyer, who was there representing you guys and talking about the race and just running Talladega and how it's you never know what's going to happen from a driver's point of view. But NASCAR kind of tweaked the schedule. It's not a cutoff race anymore. What were your thoughts on that when you saw the schedule? I know that that was always exciting, but I guess from a driver's point of view, maybe not.
Well, I mean, I think in reality is, if we're in the playoffs, and we are,
right,
it's still going to be one of the most feared events of the whole playoffs, and because of the fact of the way we race here when they get going. And then we have these big packs that tend to stay together, and they're going very, very fast, and somebody's mistake can become a lot of people's mistake in the blink of an eye. And that's been the same since I got here in 1993, and when we've had all these various packages that NASCAR has, both from the engine standpoint and the aerodynamic standpoint, that we've had to deal with over these 25 years I've been here. And what happens when they get ready to race and they do things they can do here, they've never been duplicated because we hold all the competition elements records. And so it's just it's an interesting way to race. And fortunately, because of the speed of the cars that they could be doing, you just have to keep them down to a controllable mile per hour, which is safer for the driver, the fans and spectators and everybody else.
Grant Lynch, the chairman of the Talladega Super Speedway, on the line with us, talking about the 1000bulbs.com 500 coming up in a few weeks. But something that you guys announced recently is transformation. You're transforming the infield at Talladega. This is a $50 million project that you guys have started. You're expecting it to be done in October of 2019. But what all are you trying to accomplish with this revamp of the infield?
Well, it's just adding more pizzazz to our infield. The first thing that's probably going to be one of the greatest amenities we're doing for the fans is we're going to put in a full-size tunnel. So now all of our infield's by far our hottest property. We sold out the infield almost 4 months ago. We've added some more RV spots, and we're continuing to sell some down there. But the transformation project is going to pretty much redo the infield, and the first thing will be the big tunnel that's going to come in there. So now when they get to the racetrack starting on Wednesday morning, they don't have to wait outside till we open the gate in the evening for them to come in. They'll be able to come in and out. It'll take a full-size tractor trailer to go in both directions. The tunnel will be that big. So it's much like the tunnels you've seen in Daytona and other places. We're finally going to get that for our infield customers, so that's going to be great for them. Then we're going over into the garages. The NASCAR Cup garage is currently coming off of turn 4. It's going to move all the way down to turn 1, and we're going to build a giant new fan zone all the way down, starting about halfway into the old Cup garage on turn 4. And once we get down to the media center, we're going to pretty much gut and redo the media center. And then from there, where everything all the way to turn 1 will be torn down, minus the big video board structures that we're going to continue to use. And we're going to rebuild everything down there with all the NASCAR garages and then our big fan zone complex. The centerpiece of that's going to be the new fan zone area that we're going to put for the fans. It's actually going to be between two of the Cup garages. And the top 22 teams, when they come to Talladega, will be 11 on one side of our party zone and 11 on another side of our party zone. And right in the middle between them, with a roof that actually extends out over their roofs, will be our fan zone, where everybody's going to be in there. We're going to have a 41-foot diagonal screen, you know, TV in there that they can watch while they're in there. And all types of food will be in there, and beverages and everything else. So they're going to be immersed into the epicenter of the sport, with the 22 top teams being on both sides of them. It's never been done.
Very, very cool project, and it'll all be done in time for the 50th anniversary of the track that you'll be celebrating next year. And you know, when you think about a track that's been around for 50 years, obviously there are improvements that you have to make as you go along. But as you look at this project, why was this something that you thought this was the right time? Let's go ahead and revamp the infield and get this done at Talladega.
Well, I guess it goes all the way back to when we right-sized our facility and we went to the much bigger seats in our grandstands and we redid all our bathrooms. And we started with that, and we just kept building from there. And we pretty much have just about everything here now will be redone by next October. And that'll give it set for, you know, the next 20 years or something, where we're going to have about everything we need, with the infield having all the new stuff it's going to have and the fan zone having all the stuff it's going to have. And then we'll kind of go forward from there. We've actually, I will be retiring after the race next fall, and I'm going to leave it for the younger guys to take it for the next 50 years.
Well, you lead me into my next question, that you did announce that you became the chairman in July of 2009, but in November 2019, you're going to hang it up and turn it over, as you said, to somebody else. Just what kind of led you to this decision, and ultimately, what made you decide it was time?
Well, I've gotten to do a lot of fun things for the Francis throughout my career. I came along at a time where we only had 3.5 racetracks, and I got to help build a lot of racetracks, working with our team from Daytona. I was president of Kansas City for several years and spent a lot of time out there. I was helped out with the Chicagoland Speedway of getting that group of folks up and running that as well. I spent a lot of time in Seattle and Washington State trying to pass a bill out there in Olympia for a couple of years out there. So I got to be a kind of lobbyist for the company, although we had hired lobbyists with the workforce out there as well. So I've gotten to do a whole lot of fun things, but I've been away from my family a whole lot in my career, both at RJ Reynolds for 10 years, where I traveled with their sports marketing teams, and now with what I've done for the Francis for these 26 years. And so I just figured it's about time for me to get out while I'm still young enough to do stuff with my wife that I hadn't been able to do, and my daughters and everything. So it's just a time where I thought it was just the right time for me to exit with one more big project that I get to participate in.
Grant Lynch, the chairman of the Talladega Super Speedway, on the line with us here on Chasing Checkers. The race coming up, 1000bulbs.com 500, will be October 12th through the 14th. And there's not just racing. The Camping World Truck Series, they race on Saturday. The Cup Series, of course, on Sunday. But you have a lot of other events planned as a part of the entire weekend. The big one on the Boulevard Friday night, where the drivers will parade and oversee fan competitions. I know you've added a bunch of fan competitions this year, and also a concert on Saturday night.
Yeah, that's right. Chris Jansen will be playing Saturday night, and all you need to see Chris on Saturday night is a Sunday race ticket. So you can buy your race ticket and you get a free concert. You can camp at our hundreds of acres of free camping in 3 different locations on our property, free camping. We have a multitude of discounted ticket packages for all types of folks, first responders, educators, military, collegiate, youth, kids VIP, and it just goes on and on and on. I'd encourage all the listeners to just go to our website, TalladegaSuperspeedway.com, look at all we're talking about here today, and then when you get ready to order, call us at 877-GO-TO-DEGA. That's D-E-G-A. Everybody says Dega, but there's no A in that last 4 letters. It's D-E-G-A.
Grant Lynch online with us. And so some of these competitions you've added, Miso Hangry, Hungry Hippos, the Rubber Pool, and Dirty Girl Deluxe, which that one pops out a little bit. Just a quick synopsis of what all these entail.
I go down there without really paying that much attention to what they're going to do, because I like it to be news to me as well. And I will tell you this, and I think I'm telling the truth. No matter what we design, it never goes like we want it to, and it never ever matters that it doesn't. It's just so much fun to watch them do whatever they're trying to do. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But everybody that's watching it is just having so much fun watching it. It doesn't matter that it doesn't work, if that makes sense to everybody.
Well, and I think it fits with the unpredictability of NASCAR in the playoffs. So it's the perfect combination.
I think so too. And the fans like it because it's a great way to kick off the weekend. And really, and all you need to do to be in there with the infield, all the infield people, of course, are invited. And then if you just renew your tickets during our renewal period, and it stretches way out, and we give them a payment scheme and everything else to pay off their tickets. But as long as you renew during the renewal period, you're in for the Friday night party, and then you got your Sunday ticket anyway, so you get to in on the Saturday night party with Chris Jansen play.
Brad Keselowski is the defending champion. I think it's pretty safe to say that he probably won't be the race winner because you never know who's going to win at Talladega.
Yeah, and his first victory was here. And he's won here before. Joey's his running mate's pretty darn good. But there's a lot of guys that can get to the front at Talladega, and that throughout history, we've had many one-time winners and only-time winners, and you know we've had some multiple winners and everything else. But it's one of those races where on any given moment, Ricky Stenhouse is going to win his first race. You know,
right.
any given moment, you know, David Reagan can win a race, or you know, David Gillian can win a race. Because if you get the right people around you at the right time near the end of that race, anyone can win that thing.
Well, and I think some of these drivers are probably happy that Dale Jr. is going to be in the booth and not on the track.
Yeah, it's certainly Earnhardt and Elliott was a name for many, many years that was at the top of the fan heap here at Talladega when Bill was running so fast back in the day with that red Ford. And, of course, the number three car, his last victory, I think that's probably my favorite Sunday at Talladega with that comeback he made that day. So it has many historical elements for the racetrack over the 50-year period, and I'm just glad to have been here for half its existence.
Grant Lynch, the chairman of the Talladega Super Speedway, the race weekend, October the 12th through the 14th. Of course, the Camping World Truck Series race will be there on Saturday. There's a Chris Jansen concert that night, and then the 1000bulbs.com 500, the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series race, is on Sunday. Grant, appreciate it as always, and we will be enjoying race weekend.
Well, thanks for having me on again, Chase. I really appreciate it.
Grant Lynch from the Talladega Super Speedway again coming up next weekend. Got Dover this weekend, but the Talladega Super Speedway just around the corner. So appreciate him for joining us this week. When we come back, we will look at the Dover Downs and what to expect in race number one of the round of 12. That's Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game, and online at thegamenashville.com.
What's up, football fans? Buck Rising, Tennessee Titans insider, and the host of Tackling Music City here. Join us as we talk about all things Two-Tone Blue with current and former players, NFL experts, and analysts from all walks of life every Monday and Wednesday on thegamenashville.com, in iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and live on Fridays 6 to 8 p.m. on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game, online at thegamenashville.com. Chase McCabe here with you, wrapping up another edition of the show. You can find past episodes on thegamenashville.com as well as on iTunes. Just search for Chasing Checkers. Rate, subscribe, and review. I appreciate Grant Lynch for joining us from the Talladega Super Speedway. We have hit a lot today, focused a lot on the Roval, so almost out of time, but quickly want to look ahead to the Dover International Speedway this weekend, Dover Downs, as they will be running there in race number one of the round of 12. So exciting, you know, that we're in this point of the season. It's the playoffs are going fast, but I think now you kind of have a reset for some of these drivers. And, you know, we told you the standings earlier in the show, but right now, before this race even starts, Chase Elliott, Kyle Larson, Eric Almirola, Alex Bowman are all out. They won't advance. Now, looking at those drivers and who I think is probably going to work their way in there, I would say Chase Elliott, Kyle Larson are the best two. I do believe Eric Almirola is close to a win. I don't know if it comes this year or if it happens next year, but he's a guy that's been running well. You look at the top eight as of now, Kyle Busch, Kevin Harvick, Martin Truex Jr., they're going to make it. They're going to be fine. Brad Keselowski, I think he's going to be fine. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets another win in these playoffs. Clint Bowyer is one that has kind of been hot and cold, so he's somebody that you probably need to keep an eye on just in case. Joey Logano I would throw in there. Kurt Busch. Ryan Blaney, I think, has gotten some momentum. So if I had to pick of
some drivers that are going to come out of the top eight and not make it, I'm going to probably go with Joey Logano and Kurt Busch being those two. I'm sure I'm going to be wrong, but I think that those might be the ones. Right now, you don't have a Chevy in. You have the two Toyotas of Kyle Busch and Martin Truex Jr., but you don't have a Chevy making it. It's all Fords. That's what's crazy. I mean, I guess hypothetically you could get an all Ford final for Ford weekend at Homestead. I'm sure they would be fine with that. But Martin Truex Jr., Kyle Busch, they're going to be at Homestead. I'll just go ahead and news flash for you. That's probably going to happen. But and then Chase Elliott, I thought he had some momentum when he won that race. Hasn't quite materialized yet, but you know, Dover is his type of track. Those mile to mile and a half intermediate tracks, the of course the monster mile, he tends to run well at those. I think that so does Kyle Larson, benefits him as well. But we'll kind of have to see what happens. But Ryan Blaney with that momentum, Clint Bowyer with a third place finish last week, he's got some momentum. Alex Bowman has been running well. So the thing about these playoffs that have been so awesome is, just like the whole season, you've had the big three, which has been predictable, but the playoffs themselves have been unpredictable. And I think that has been entertaining. It's been what NASCAR has been looking for. I mean, yeah, you're going to have Kyle Busch get a win. You're going to have Kevin Harvick running up there. You're going to have Truex. I mean, they're not going away, but you have had a little bit of unpredictability with these races through the first three races of the playoffs and now going into the fourth. So things to look forward to: Dover this weekend, which is a mile racetrack. And then, of course, as we said, you go to Talladega next weekend, which is a wild card, the super speedway, and then Kansas. So you have a mile, a super speedway, and then an intermediate mile and a half. So three different tracks. And then in the next round, you have Martinsville, the short track. You have Texas, which is, you know, kind of your speedway, your mile and a half. And then ISM, which is Phoenix, which they have a new surface. And Phoenix is always unpredictable before you get to Homestead. So diversity within the racetracks here over the next few weeks. That's going to do it for this edition of Chasing Checkers. Again, iTunes, Chasing Checkers, rate, subscribe, and review online at thegamenashville.com. I am Chase McCabe. Follow me on Twitter, and we will be back next week for another edition. Also, check out Through the Ropes, John Burton from News Channel 5, talking wrestling with me this week. So check that one out as well. Lots of great podcasts at thegamenashville.com. I'm Chase McCabe. Have a great race weekend, everybody.